Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
And when you're old, you just can't beat a good minuet. You just can't do it. Welcome to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio with my very favorite business partner, good friend, and fellow sinus sufferer, Mr. Richard Polinelli. Hey, hey, hey.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it great to be in the allergy season? I mean, it's
I go to dust my TV and my stereo and stuff in the living room, and it's like yellow. The pollen is so thick out here.
Yeah.
So they're coming to clean my vents tomorrow.
That'll help.
And I'm like, yeah, they go through with these brushes and vacuums, and they go through all the way to the heater and to the blower inside. They clean it all out, and hopefully that'll help a little bit. But man, I'm getting so tired of my nose being clogged and stuffy and coughing and wheezing and sneezing and ick.
I hear that.
Bobby Jean, of course, is in Illinois still. She could not make it back for the show. So we have to, I told her, of course, we're still going to talk about you. So let's talk about Bobby Jean. No. Bobby Jean, we hope you're doing okay. And I need to know if you actually had a tornado or did you just stay on tornado watch last night? That'd be interesting to know. So if you find yourself with something to do, you can always call us and bug us. We love that. Okay, tonight's guest is a return visitor. And she is her first books that we read were about the dead people running around in Deadwood. Mm-hmm. And this one is about dead people running around in Arizona with help from dead people from Deadwood. And a cast of thousands, and I'm just going to let her just go. Welcome back to the Writer's Block, Miss Ann Charles. Hey, Ann.
Hi. Thanks for having me back, you guys.
Oh, my gosh. It was so fun having you the last time. Richard, you missed it. It was Russ and I before. And writes books. If you haven't read any of Ann's stuff, they all have, like, skeletons on the cover. And she has a great story on her covers. I want her to tell that story, too. But she's such a satiric. She writes with tongue in cheek and satire and satire. That stories are fun. The satire is great. The humor is there and it's marvelous. And she's just a prolific writer. I don't know how many books this is now, Ann. How many?
Oh, I think I'm around 32. Although I'm just finishing up 33, so it's somewhere in the 30s.
Yeah. Now we're going to talk a little bit tonight about, we have so much to talk with you about because of course you are just a wonderful person. We're going to talk about a little bit about your book, In Cahoots with the Prickly Pear Posse. Mm-hmm. And one thing I noticed when I got into this book and I noticed that, you know, a lot of people are now putting, table of contents in fiction books. And I just, you know, Richard and I are publishers and we don't believe in that. However, you put a cast of characters in front of yours. And in reading your book, I understood why. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can keep up with all of them. There just is no way. I mean, you've got people making cameos from Deadwood.
Yes. Right.
You've got people coming from all over in this book. And it's like, can you take a few minutes to just give our listeners an idea of what this book is about?
Sure. Well, it is the fifth book in the Jackrabbit Junction mystery series. So, I didn't used to do cast of characters for both, any of my books. And it was about the third or fourth book into the Deadwood series, I believe, when somebody said to me, you know, it would be really helpful to have a cast of characters so we could see just at a glance who's in the, which book, you know, who's in this next book in the series. And so I, as you noticed on the cast of characters, I have behind it parentheses and I put book numbers for which books they've right. been in to help you, because sometimes some people binge read these. And so they know all these characters already because they've just been in that world. But if you're like me and you read a few, but then you have to take a break and, you know, do whatever life makes you do, and you come back 6 to 8 months later, you might not remember who exactly this character was. And you might have read other books in the meantime. So right. I thought it was a really good idea to put, you know, the characters that are in this book, put a really short description just to remind you of who they are. And then also to list the book numbers that you've seen them before in case you have, you know, you wonder about that. And part of the reason is these are not individual, you know, stories that just, you know, like an egg of the, I'm trying to think, what's a series where, you know, Nancy Drew, where it's always Nancy Drew, but they're different mysteries. These are ongoing stories with plots that continue on. Some wrap up, you know, there's always a story question that wraps up with each book, you know, and we solve part, but then there's more going on because these characters keep, you know, growing and evolving and things keep happening. So I thought it was a really good way to help people, you know, keep moving through the stories with me. And just in case you forgot, you know, who so-and-so was, or if you want to go back and look, you know, at that previous scene in a previous book, you can now, you know, kind of find your way back. And it's really helpful in the Deadwood Mystery series, the contemporary one. And we haven't talked about, we talked about the Deadwood Undertaker series before,
right.
which right. we're getting ready to release book four of that this late summer. But for the Deadwood Contemporary Mystery series, that one, I'm going to start working on book 13 now. So if you've been following, you know, if you've been along with me, it gets confusing after a while, you know, trying to keep track of everything. And we actually sold two Christmases ago. I created just a Dear Reader or a reader notebook so that you could, you know, I used a lot of the illustrations that my brother has done. And we put this book together with a lot of lines and just notes so that you could keep track of it, you know, yourself, if you like to keep track of series and what's going on. So you don't have to go back and read them all again. Mm-hmm. You can go look at your notes and catch back up quick. So just trying to find ways to help readers continue on without making them pause. I mean, I read back in college, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And let me tell you, I went to that map at the beginning so many times, and I was starting to take notes on what's that? And just spelling the characters' names in that, you know, some of them. So I am one who always needs a little help if it's, you know, longer books, longer series, keeping track of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I Richard and I talked about this before, especially when it comes to like Lord of the Rings or some of the newer sci-fi out there, which we do a lot of sci-fi in Tuscany Bay. But I swear to God that all the science fiction writers get together in a little room with a lot of alcohol and try to outdo each other on strange names.
I know. I can't.
Because you can't pronounce any of them.
No.
And there's some of them are spelled all consonants. There's no syllables.
Yes.
Like Gnark, you know, I mean.
I know. Can't it just be Billy Bob or something like that?
I know, huh?
Or Billy Bob Gnark, you know, just give us something that I can hold on to a little easier.
I know. It's like Billy Bob from the outer recesses of Jupiter's 467th ring.
Yes.
You know.
Exactly. Hey, you're dealing with galaxies far, far away. They don't speak English over there. I mean, come on.
I know.
Yeah, their language is guttural. And these guys, I mean, they sit around and they invent language too.
Uh-huh. Oh, I know.
Which it's always incredible. Has amazed me.
Yeah.
To me, that's incredible.
It is. It's just amazing. I know. I love science fiction. I love movies more than reading. I just don't have a lot of time to read anymore, but I'm always going through, you know, there has to be something new in the science fiction movies. Come on, give me something good.
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, we laugh a lot about science fiction characters, but in all right now, that's our best selling covers are science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not going to complain. puts money in my bank account.
Well, they keep spotting all these UFOs all over. So it's going hand in hand with it. Maybe you guys are in on it.
Meanwhile, you know what? That could very well be.
I know.
We won't tell. We'll
right. No, but I don't think I answered your question. I didn't say so In Cahoots is the fifth in the series, and right. It's about the Morgan sisters, which star in this series. There's three of them, Claire, Katie, and Ronnie. And each of them are dealing with different things in different books. So that's what's kind of fun about the ongoing series is having right. the three different, I go into each of their points of view, you know, as well as a couple other characters here and there. So it makes it really fun, especially I really love family dynamics and dysfunctional families, all that good stuff, because it's just, I mean, I didn't grow up in the perfect family. We divorced and all kinds of stuff that was going on. So I can really relate to that. And I like to write characters that people can relate to. They're not perfect. They're not amazingly beautiful. They don't have, you know, the stellar this or that. They have touches of, you know, realism, and we all have flaws. So
right.
I have fun with that. And In Cahoots is about the middle sister or the youngest sister, Kate, who's pregnant. And one of the things is the baby hormones has made her a little crazy. And it comes from the father's line. So anyway, she's crazy, and she's trying to help her sisters, who there's a diamond killer is what we're called. He's hunting them down because they found missing diamonds about a book ago. And they held on to that. Well, they actually turned him in, but the killer's coming looking for his diamonds, and he's killing brutally along the way, everything where those diamonds touch. So, and the last place they came was to them before they turned him in to the law. So they're on his hit list and, or her, they don't know at the start. So they're kind of like paranoid and worried because here he comes. And so that's sure. what the story is about is, and Kate's not really in under the radar, but she's the kind of, she's, you know, nest building. She's going to protect her family come what may, but she is crazy Kate. And so she's does some fun, wild things and gets her sister into some fun trouble in the meantime. So there's suspense, mystery, but there's also a lot of humor. And that's really part of the core of all my books, is the humor.
I'll paraphrase. But there's a spot where the sister says, well, we can't do this by ourselves. Oh, I know. Let's put together a posse.
I know, the prickly pear. Yes,
the prickly pear posse.
The prickly pear posse. I have so much fun because the series is set in southeastern Arizona, Sonoran Desert. I really have fun with all the titles and the covers, playing with, you know, I have... Dance of the Winnebagoes was the first one. It's set in an RV park, you know, around an RV park. And there's Jackrabbit Junction Jitters, and there's the Great Jackalope Stampede and the Rowdy Coyote Rumble. So I love to play with the desert animals in the theme, you know, in the whole theme. And I'm currently finishing book six of this series, and it's Twisty Tortoise Tussles. So I also love alliteration. So
say that three times fast if you can, right?
I've had my mom is like, say that again one more time. What is wrong with you? She helps talk about him up, and she lives up in Devon Lead, and she's always been one of my biggest helpers getting the books out and talking about him. And she says, why can't you just make names that are easy for me to say and tell people? So we go back to the science fiction names. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm playing right in on it too.
Well, why not? Yeah, southeastern Arizona is probably one of my most favorite parts of the whole world. Having crawled all over southeastern Arizona and Tombstone and Bisbee and the Dragoon Mountains and Skeleton Canyon, and there's actually a canyon there that I wrote about in, I don't remember which book it was. I think it was The Return. It's called Teatro El Diablo. Mm. And you can only get there on this ridgeline. And once you get into the canyon itself, the canyon walls are nothing but caves everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And that's where this character, the deacon, hangs out. That's where he's got his lair, but it's a very cool place. And a friend of mine read the book, and she goes, I've been there.
I know, I'm writing that down because we go down there often. I'm actually, I started in on Contraband Cowboys, and that's, well, you're up in Williamson Valley.
Yeah, right? Williamson Valley, yeah.
down in Tombstone to go meet his brother, right?
Or right.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually Tucson.
Tucson, that's it.
Okay. Lewis goes down to meet his brother at the Barre Ranch.
So I have to ask you, Williamson Valley War, Yavapai County, Prescott, Williamson Valley, is that right? Yeah. I live on Williamson Valley Road in Williamson Valley. Yes. So I was I was starting this book with, that's not happening in my Williamson Valley. No way.
But it actually did happen in Arizona.
Right, right. Well, that's what you in your
Knight Riders did show up there at one point during the late 1870s and 1880s. And they tried to get rid of all the black ranchers that had settled up there.
Yeah, you warned. I was grateful that you warned in the beginning, you know, that this is going to be a little rough at first. Not rough writing, but the story. So I went into it going, all right, here we go. But
well, that was the prologue.
Yeah.
That's right. When Lewis's family gets wiped out.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, boy. You start right out going, we got to go. We're going to go up there and kick some butt. In Williamson Valley.
But it's like your book, chapter one. The first line, it grabbed you. Well, same thing with Countrymen and Cowboys. It had to grab you.
Right.
You know, and if the Knight Rider is sliding around the side of a building with a hood on.
Yeah.
You got to find out what he's doing there.
I was nervous right out of the gate and knowing this is going to go south so bad. Oh boy, here we go. But I was in it, you know, and ready and let's go get him now. So it's fun. I hope to read that we're going to take a trip shortly to Northwest Ohio and I'm hoping to take it along with me and read it on the way.
Yeah, I really tried to make that story about comradeship
nice.
more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
The camaraderie of the people, of the different people that came together to defeat mm-hmm. these guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
And I really like the story. That's one of my wife's favorite books, actually. The bookie, she loves Contraband Cowboys.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm excited to keep going. I mean, we got to go kick some butt, so.
Yeah, buddy. And they do.
Yeah, good.
They do. Anyway, back to, you know what? We got to have a commercial. We're gonna take a real short break. This is LA Talk Radio. We'll be back with you right after this brief message from LA Talk Radio.
So you want to be a radio talk show host, huh? Well, why don't you get off your butt and do just that? You see, at LA Talk Radio, we've got slots available all day long, Saturdays and Sundays included. They're 50-minute increments, so all you have to do is go to latalkradio.com, click on the link that says Become a Host, follow the easy-to-follow instructions, and Mr. Sam Hassan will be more than delighted to walk you through everything you need to do to get your own radio show started up and running worldwide with a podcast to follow. That's very easy to do. LATalkRadio.com. Let them help you get your dream alive. LA Talk Radio, you've got something to say. Now let's hear it.
And we are back with our guest tonight. And it is now, oh my goodness, it is now 17 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock Pacific time. And we are, of course, in the studio with Ms. Ann Charles, a prolific writer, 32 novels and counting. And she's looking all the lovelier for having chased her cat around and taken him to the vet today. Mm-hmm. So anyway, if you want to call and talk to Ann, the number here is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. Question, Ann, where do your storylines come from?
Wow. A lot of it is, you know, just real world things, talking to people. I've met some really interesting people in my time, and they tell stories, you know, about family things that happen. As you guys probably know, nonfiction is so much more crazy than fiction. I mean, of course, Jerry Springer Show, you know, I know some of that was scripted, but there's crazy stuff out there that people and families do in all kinds of, you know, as well as, you know, foots washing up on shore on Washington beaches and, Canadian beaches, stuff like that going on. So taking, bits and pieces of that and pulling them in and then building the story. But most all of my books are character driven. I'll state that right up front. We're not going to go through and solve, you know, crime after crime, and it's going to be about how to solve the crime and what happened and all the clues and all that. It's going to be about the characters trying to solve this with all the craziness and family drama going on around them. So I'm not a hard hitting crime writer or, you know, mystery writer that way. My goal is to entertain you, add a little suspense. If you're reading the Deadwood series, add some, you know, supernatural stuff going on. That's kind of fun. And with this Arizona series, it's more family dynamics. You know, maybe you can relate, or you know somebody's family like this. And just like you said, the camaraderie. These three sisters, yeah, they fight and they bicker. They're sisters, but they also are there for each other. Every time they stand up for each other, they're the first to point out, you know, you got this wrong, but at the same time, don't say that about my sister type of thing, you know? So that's a really strong thing throughout the series is the sisterhood. And it's not like, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. It's nothing. No, this is just craziness. They're ending up in jail. Sometimes they put themselves in jail just to make a point to the sheriff who one of the oldest sister is dating. So just to make a point about something, you know, you're not doing this right. So it's mostly supposed to be fun and take your mind off current day things that are not so fun.
Yeah, I hear you, Rich.
Yeah, you mentioned the sheriff, and I'm curious about him because he is probably the one character that I connected with in this book the most. And I'll get into why in a minute, but is he based on somebody you know, or did you just kind of create him from whole cloth?
I just created him. It was back in book three, the Great Jackalope Stampede. And what I did when I introduced each, so there's three sisters, and the first book is about Claire, the middle sister, and it's her start. And she's kind of the one that can't ever settle on a job. And she's gone down with her grandfather to the RV park because he's gone down to find a woman. And her job sent by her mother is to keep him from finding a gold digger. So she's down there with him and his army buddies, and they are not happy she's there, and they're treating her like she's one of the boys, which is really not pleasant. So it's a lot of fun that way. So, and then the second book, I brought in the mother, and I brought in the youngest sister, Kate. She's in her 30s, but Kate. And so then we met the second sister, and we got into her head, and we saw what her life. And then in the third book, I brought in the oldest sister, Veronica, and that's where she met, you know, the sheriff. And we'd met him in the previous books, but in that book, it starts one of her first scenes as he pulls her over, and she's had a really bad day, and she tries to bribe him with this fake jewelry that her ex-husband had bought her, saying it was real diamonds. Mm-hmm. And she's like, here, you want some of this? She'd been to the pawn shop. They wouldn't even take it. She has no money. She's in trouble. And he's like, are you trying to bribe the sheriff of the county? You know, and so it was a really fun start because he knew right away something's wrong with her more than, you know, she's got a problem, a bigger problem, mm-hmm. and she's hiding it. So it was a really fun relationship to kind of build where you have the Morgan sisters are like, no law dogs, keep them out of our family, you know, stay away. And for the oldest sister to get involved with the sheriff of the county was just perfect for, you know, that kind of a struggle.
Well, he reminds me of a sheriff I knew. We spent about 3-4 years in a very small town, very small county in North Dakota. And the sheriff there was, his style of law enforcement was a lot like what I've read with Grady. Yeah. He wasn't so much in a hurry to throw you in jail and put you in front of the judge as to find out what's going on and figure it out so that things are a little bit smoother in his town and his county. And I kind of like the way Grady kind of, you know, calls his deputy and says, no, kick him loose. And then he goes around, he kind of finds out what actually happened, and he can kind of figure out what we want to do. And he just reminded me so much of that sheriff from, oh God, it's 50 years almost, just the way he approached things. You know, the sheriff up there would be driving around. If he saw the kids doing something, he'd just pull over and tell them go home. And you knew if he didn't go home, he'd be calling your parents because in a town of 400 people, everybody knew everybody.
Right, right.
So you knew he could call your parents and say, hey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just that for some reason I gravitated toward Grady, and I'm hoping we will see more of him as the series goes.
Well, it's and this is what happens too within the series. One book will focus on, you know, a certain thing and a certain couple characters, and then we'll go to the next book. And those characters, they're, you know, one of their subplots has been solved, but we got this other problem now with another sister and another thing. And so sometimes there's more of them, and sometimes then they, you know, and different characters come forth. And that's what I love about writing a series, is we get to move, you know, and have, okay, in this book, this is a real problem. Now in this, the sixth book that I'm, the Tortoise Tussles that I'm writing, I have 5 different points of views. And that's part of why it's twisty Tortoise Tussles, because we are twisting. I want you to have the feel of twisting through a plot, twisting through many plots. And yet there's a single thread that keeps, you know, pulling everything together. And it's been a real challenge for me. I haven't written, you know, I've done 4, but this is the first time 5, and to really build all that in, and then keep a hold of it, you know, not let the story get out of control. It's been a real challenge, but that's what I love about, I like to have challenges for myself. Otherwise, this is going to get monotonous for me. I mean, I don't mean to sound like, oh, I'm the greatest writer ever. I'm not, but I have to keep challenging and trying new things.
Mm-hmm. Have you written any that you like to bring back only for color? I'm going to give you an example. I wrote 2 characters in a book I wrote called Striker, and they were like these 2 totally loser bad guys, Lenny and Whitey.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're such losers that when Striker catches them, he tells them to drop their weapons, and they toss them on the ground, and they just virtually fly apart because they're such crap. And these guys are just going, oh, man, you know. But they show up in 2 or 3 books. And I really like them as characters, only because they really enliven the story enough to where you can always look forward to them showing up.
Right, right.
Because they're total idiots, both of them.
You know, what's been really interesting is, you know, keeping in close touch with readers via social media and emails or whatnot. I do listen to, especially, you know, I have a beta crew that reads the book, and there's about 40 to 50 of them that will read the book before it goes live. And they get back with me with feedback and what they like. And I kind of analyze that. And if there's a character that it seems like they're not really, you know, into, okay, well, we're going to let them fade a little bit. But then a lot of times, you know, it sounds like with your characters, I might introduce somebody or a couple of people and they love them right out of the gate. And then I go, oh, we need to keep these guys coming back in.
Right.
So you're always, it's like having people sit in a room and the marketers are asking them all these questions. You're always listening to hear, what is it you liked about this? Okay, so you like these characters, but you're really tired of maybe this character and how they're acting. So maybe we need to tone that one down a little bit, turn these up over here, make the angst different, you know, come at this differently. Yeah. But I will tell you, in the biggest series I have is the Deadwood Mystery series. I had an old guy at the beginning, and he's holding a double barrel shotgun on the heroine and, you know, saying, what are you doing out here at my ranch? You know, did the bank send you? Who send you, you know, sent you? And his old man, Harvey. And I didn't expect him to really, he was just part of that first chapter to kind of give it some oomph, you know, and bring it. And I just saw him when I was writing it. Well, he is huge. He's one of the main, you know, he's a huge part of that whole series. And he was just going to be in there for that little bit. So I think it's so fun as authors, as you guys probably know, when you bring in somebody and all of a sudden they take over, you know, and you're like, wow, I didn't expect that. You didn't have a, you know, goal motivation conflict chart in my notes. What are we going to do about you? You know?
Right. Well, I've got one of them to me was Bountiful Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis's brother. And, you know, he came in a book or two before, and you first meet him, he's throwing a guy through a door.
Yeah.
At the Crystal Palace in Tombstone. So, you know, because the guy called him the N-word.
So he right out, boom.
Start right out, right out. I mean, and then they brought him in and they bought him a beer, and because he hit the other guy, he wasted his other beer over hitting the other guy over the head with his mug. So they bought him a beer and they hired him on the spot. You know, they need guys like that.
Right.
But
right.
It turns out to be a great bronc buster, but he's very central to the book Contraband Cowboys, as you will find out.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking for it. Well, just the start of him, you know, just right out of the gate.
Yeah. I mean, he's in the corral breaking the bronc.
Exactly.
And the bronc's kicking his butt.
Exactly. Yes. I asked. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
No, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I also had another, and it's in that Deadwood series again, and I don't know why I'm not thinking. I mean, I know this has happened in the Arizona series, but in the third book in, I had a character come in, and he wanted to buy a haunted hotel from, she's a real estate agent in that series, wanted to buy a haunted hotel, and he said he could hear ghosts, he talked to ghosts. I just expected him to be just this, you know, fun character for that book. He's a major part of the crew again, because so well loved, so funny. So yeah, you never know which characters show up on set that they're going to become something and others will just fade away.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was the question I was going to ask you. Do you have, cause I have a book where I needed a character to meet with the secondary character to start the series off with. And in writing that, all of a sudden these two guys now, the throwaway character is going to be in every book. Uh-huh. And the secondary character is kind of taken over the book. And I was going to ask you if you've ever had a character kind of barge into something and just won't go away. But it sounds like you do. You have.
Well, I do. And in this, in book five, in Cahoots, you meet, I think it's in that, you meet Penelope, which is the sheriff, Grady Harrison's sister, who also lives in town and owns a local diner. And she was so strong coming in. I liked her so much that in Twisty Tortoise Tussle, she now has a point of view and we're really getting to know her and her backstory. And yeah, she came in and you know what I found that I loved about her was, you know, he's the sheriff and everybody respects him. And even, you know, Ronnie, they're all, they get a little mouthy, but he's the sheriff and they don't really, you know, he's not quite just a person, you know, it's always there. With his sister, now she comes at him like he's her brother. And she can say stuff to him about, you need to take care of this right now. Quit messing around. I'm doing the sheriff stuff and being all, you know, she comes at him like a sister, which is so much fun. I didn't realize how much fun that was going to be. And I have brothers. So yeah, probably some of that is coming out from family growing up with brothers around me. But again, she was a character that was just, he has a sister in an earlier book. And then her name is this. And, you know, then she's on scene a couple times and then suddenly it became something.
Yeah, we have to take a real quick break here. Don't go away, Ann. We'll be right back with you. You are listening to LA Talk Radio, and we'll be right back with you live worldwide right after this brief message from Tuscany Bay Books.
Hey, everybody. Richard Polinelli from Tuscany Bay Books here. And if you're an author and you've just finished your manuscript, you just got the easy part done. There is editing, formatting, cover creation, marketing. The list goes on and on. But don't panic, because we're here and we can do all of that for you so that you can focus on the most important thing, writing your next book. And if you're a reader looking for your next great read, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. We have books for the kids. We have mysteries. We have thrillers. We have westerns. And we have some of the best science fiction being written by award-winning science fiction authors who will tell you an entertaining story, not send you to your therapist with message fiction. So again, readers and writers, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and get ready to set sail on your next great adventure.
And we are back. It is now 6:34, and we are on the air with Ann Charles and, of course, Richard Polinelli. And Ann, let's talk a little bit about your process, because you've got quite a unique process going when you're when you're writing. You don't write by yourself. You write with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
And right. You guys mix and match. Or I'm guessing mix and match of sorts. Can you give us a little bit about that?
Sure. So the Deadwood Undertaker series is the ones where you'll see written by Sam Lucky and Ann Charles. And that's my husband. And we came up with this idea for a prequel, if you will, to the Deadwood humorous mystery series that happened back in the 1870s. So it's a blend of Old West and supernatural, which is so much fun when you can throw supernatural into, you know, another genre like that. And so the two of us, when we write those books, we brainstorm together a lot. I am annoyingly so. We need to have the spine, the structure. Let's talk about what's the first turning point, you know, our opening scene, first turning point. What's the build up to the midpoint? I'm always talking about that. And he, you know, he does that. He does a lot of that naturally. But so we really blend together on that way, as well as, you know, brainstorming. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Maybe we should do this. So then we come up with some ideas and some notes, and then he goes through first, and he does the first draft and writes it. You know, we again, we're brainstorming along the way about scenes, but he's writing that first draft and getting that all done. And then afterwards, I come through and I do my and Charles things, as we call them, where it and I don't, you know, sometimes writers do separate parts to a story. You know, he might write chapter one, I would write chapter two. We don't do that. We blend everything. So it's more of a blending of our voices. And one of the great compliments we receive is people who have read my books for a long time will say, I can't tell what's you and what's him, which is great. That's what we kind of want. We want it to be a mixed voice kind of feel. Now, he's going to start here probably in the next year writing some of his, you know, different series and stuff of his own too. And so you might be able to, you know, you'll hear his voice much more clearly. But we really, once he's done and then I go through and do my part, then we read it together. And then if we don't like something I changed or a way he had, then we have discussions and we talk about it. And why did you want to change this? Why does this need to be this way you feel? So it's a real big compromise through the whole thing. It's being mm-hmm. married on the page, just like we are with our kids and at home, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we're done, you know, we read it and we read the thing aloud. So it takes us a while to hear it all and find the final, you know, clunks and all that. And then we ship it off to editors and the beta team and all that and get it going. So it's a process. It takes a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. We might be quicker if we did it a different way, but mm-hmm. this is just the way we chose to write this series.
Mm-hmm. Richard and I did a book together called The Last Lonely Trail. And we did the chapter-wise. And the thing that took all the time was when Richard would submit chapter two or three or at a time. And then I would have to go through it with a fine-tooth comb and get the rhythm of the chapter before I would write my chapters.
Right.
And then it went back and forth until the book was finished. But the best compliment we had was a review on Amazon that they thought that he wrote the book by himself.
Oh, that's.
They could not tell it was two people writing the book.
Yeah. Right. I do. I agree with you. I think that's a big, because if you're feeling those different voices, I think it's going to pull you out of the story, and that's mm-hmm. no good.
Right.
It has to blend in. It has to sound like one storyteller, even though it's two minds coming at it.
Right, and it has to. Your dialogue has to mesh always.
Right.
You know, and you can't. You know, chapter one, two, and three, the dialogue can't be different than chapter four, five, and six, right, when you have different characters. So right. I mean, you have to really watch what you're doing.
Yeah, we actually have characters, certain characters that I will tend to have, you know, more of a say on dialogue, and others that he does. And it's so funny because, like I said, he goes first. And so I'll be going through reading to do my part or just reading it first. And he'll put, you know, Anne, say something, you know, he'll have the funniest lines and often inappropriate because he is my husband. And I'll be like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? You know, or he leaves me little messages in the text and it's so funny. It just cracks me up because it pulls me right out of the story. Like, oh my gosh, what?
Sure.
But he has so much fun doing that. It's like little sure. Easter eggs for me as I go through that makes it more fun.
Well, the fun sure. thing I had was Jim had a scene where he, Armstrong's horse gets shot. And killed. And Armstrong is carrying on about this horse. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, okay, at some point down the line, I've got to work in Armstrong still griping about his horse. Uh-huh. Because Marshall Hall is at this point, it's like, I am sick and tired hearing this damn horse. Come on. So I did. I waited. They were actually on a train. And Armstrong's still belly aching about the horse. And I think Hall threatens to get him, put him on a mule or something. A mule. Anyway, yeah. So, you know, it was nice that Jim and I, as we were going, and it sounds like you and your husband, will find these little things and go, okay, I'm saving this for here. And right. here is where I'm going to use it. And I think it just makes the book that much more enjoyable.
I think so, too. I agree. It will go back and forth with, you know, should we kill this character? No, you can't kill them. No, you can't do that. You know, and, oh, I'm going to kill somebody. No, you're not. You know, so we'll go back and forth with that kind of a thing. Don't kill so-and-so. I'll be so mad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, J.B. Armstrong was a real Texas Ranger. But I wanted to show J.B. Armstrong as a rough, tough Texas Ranger that wasn't afraid to shoot a guy, but had an absolute freaking conniption fit over his horse getting shot.
So upset about his best friend. His horse is his best friend.
And they're walking down the street, and Hall says, well, I'll get you another horse. And he goes, I don't want another horse. I like that one.
Yeah, exactly. That's my horse.
Hey, we're going to have to take another real quick one, and we're going to be back with you in just a moment. This is LA Talk Radio, and we'll be right back after a word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
And we are back. It is now 6:42, and it's Pacific time. So if you're on the East Coast, it is now 9:42. Let's talk about dialogue.
Okay.
I are both dialogue.
Okay.
Okay.
Jim, we're having mic issues. Okay, Jim. Yeah, you got mic issues on your end, Jim.
Wait a minute. Is that better?
There you are. Huh. We welcome Jim back from his battling with the wild wombat.
Oh my God! It's just like, you know, can't hear, can't talk. Everything's coming through the nose. Hey. Anyway, Richard and I both love dialogue, and we both feel that dialogue actually fuels the book. It actually drives the book. But your dialogue has to be realistic. And we have read a lot of books on this show. Bobby Jean would have the number 500 and 600 and some odd, 700 and some odd, whatever it is, 7 years. So do the math. And we have read a lot of books where the dialogue was horrid. To be kind, it was horrid. Really shitty would be more the truth, but. We really appreciate good dialogue, and your dialogue was natural, and which we liked a lot. I mean, we strive for natural dialogue, and you know, people talk in a certain rhythm, mm-hmm. and everybody talks with a different rhythm, and you captured that, and I'm glad to see that you have captured that. Now I don't know if when you write your dialogue, do you go back and read it out loud?
I do. When I first write, so I write a first draft of each. I go chapter by chapter. And the book comes out. And I'll finish a chapter and then I'll go back through it. And I equate it to it's black and white when I first start. And then I go back through and do color and I start coloring it in. And a lot of times the dialogue in that first draft is just stilted, but I'm getting what I need out to make the scene. So then I start going back through and this is a really interesting series in that they're sisters. So they're going to have similarities, of course, because they were raised together, but yet they're very different in their personalities, like just like every, you know, most sisters and brothers and families are. So I really kind of flip into each mode. And sometimes I even use, you know, like for example, Claire will call her sister Kate. She always calls her Kate. That's her name to her. But Veronica calls her Katie. It's Katie because Veronica's the oldest and Katie's the youngest. And so to her, it's the little sister Katie.
Sure.
So that often helps to, of course, with dialogue tags because you quickly learn who calls who, you know, and we have Veronica versus Ronnie. A lot of people call her Ronnie, but Sheriff Grady always calls her Veronica. So it really helps that way too. But I have to be alone. So I will read the dialogue, you know, read it out loud. I will read it in the tones and the ways I want it to sound to make sure I've got the beats down, the cadence and all that good stuff. And then I've been fortunate enough to find a narrator to do the audiobooks for this, Lisa Larson, that she understands what I'm, you know, she gets that same voice, the dialogue. She nails it for me time and again, which is really hard when you're picking on a narrator because, you know, when you're acting, they're actors. And when they read a line, they don't know for sure what you meant. But she manages to get the tones in there, you know, and when they're yelling at it, you know, or just the funny stuff and land the joke too, which is huge. There is some work, and dialogue's been one of my favorite things. And I actually had a class in college, creative writing, and one of the assignments was you could only write the scene in dialogue only. You could use no tags, no body language, nothing. It had to be totally dialogue. And it was about, I don't know, it had to be like 500 plus words or something. And so that was a real challenge, but it really taught me. Right. It was one of my first things where this is how we structure dialogue. This is how you make it clear through speech who's talking. So it was a really interesting assignment. And I'm always working on dialogue, always listening to the way people talk out in the world.
Yes.
And going, that's interesting. Listen to the tones, listen to how they say that word or, you know, stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's an exercise.
Yeah, people throw in a lot of hums. People throw in ums, they, huh?
Yeah. Yes.
What?
Right.
You know? And if your character is prone for that, you got to remember to put it in there.
Right, right.
You know, it's you know, in a couple of minutes we have left, I've been asking this question. Well, actually, quickly, without malice aforethought, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, I know I've asked this question before, how did you get out of it?
I have, especially recently, between I got COVID and I was knocked down last year with that. But then I'm getting old enough that my parents are really starting to struggle physically. And there's a lot coming back. My mom has Parkinson's and it's really coming on stronger now in her older years. And it's really hard to write humor when there's, you know, this big pandemic and your parents are not doing well and you have teenagers that are very teenagery. You know, when you tell them to do something, you're getting mouth back, you know, and the whole thing. And I'm trying to find, you know, and I'm in the crazy years of, you know, changing my life and the big M, the menopause word. So boy, I have mood swings. And so you put all that together. And I thought for about a month or two in December and January, I thought, I think I'm done. I don't think I have any humor left because I'm just struggling under the weight of, especially, you know, with my parents not doing well, it just was hard. So I just kept reading books that I like and telling myself, give yourself a break, give yourself some time. You've got to get a handle on all these different stressors and do some meditation, do some exercising, figure out how to get through this. And I did. And I'm still in the middle of, you know, like today, my cat pulling its thing. But I have to get pages written. So I'm getting better at shutting off the stress and the outdoor life. I don't read a lot of headlines or pay attention to headlines too much. I can't because, especially when writing, I just can't. Because if you're going to write humor and you see the tragedies that are out there,
yeah,
it really pulls you down. So you have to kind of put yourself in a little isolation tank, which
right.
sometimes is my closet, and then just try to find the funny, you know, and go forth.
Okay, last question. What do you expect from your readers when they read your book? What message do you give them, or do you try to get your readers to pick up from you as they read your books?
I want them. Okay. So when I started, and I'll make this quick, I wanted to write books that made people smile because my favorite books were the ones that made me laugh or took me out of, you know, current situations and mm-hmm. it was an escape. I'm escaping into it. I read a lot of romance in my younger years growing up. My first marriage wasn't the best. So that escape, you know, I read a lot of humor and I read a lot of horror growing up too, just the, you know, it was something so different. So with my books, what I want is you to be able to sink down into them, to get into the lives of these other people that have all kinds of troubles that, you know, you're fortunate you probably don't have. I hope you don't have. And just enjoy the relationships and the humor and the fun. And when you finish the book, maybe you can smile again and go get groceries and not want to run someone over with your grocery cart, you know, and you can.
Or your car. Kind
of, or your car. You want to go back out and enjoy life, and you can find the small things in life that make you smile again. That's entertainment. Giving you something to laugh or smile about has always been at the top of my list. And gotcha. That's why humor is in everything just about that I write.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Well, we are out of time. Unfortunately. So next week, don't go away after the show. We hang around and we BS for a little bit. So if you want to do that, just don't hang up. Next week, our guest is Paul Bahau. He is his new book, Sunset Distortion. We'll be picking apart and reading, and hopefully it'll be just a terrific tome. Much like the Cahoots with the Prickly Pear Posse, which fun book. It is, of course, In Cahoots with the Prickly Pear Posse. You can pick it up at Amazon or all the online booksellers. The author is Ann Charles, and we want to thank her for spending her evening with us. We know how lovely Prescott, Arizona is in the spring. Mm-hmm. And I'll be asking you a couple questions about Prescott when we get off the air. But for right now, for Richard Polinelli, myself, Bobby Jean Bell, who is conspicuously absent, of course, Sam Hassan, and of course, the bookie without whom this show would not be possible. We are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.